presents Radio Zapatista. Zapata vive, la lucha sigue.
This is Radio Zapatista, Chiapas No Se Olvida, and while we're not sure if the revolution will or will not be televised, we're pretty sure that it will be broadcast over the radio, and that's what we're doing here from the studios of KPFA in Berkeley, La Otra Califas, from below and to the left, where we transmit the first and second Fridays of every month, talking about the struggles going on in Chiapas, the Zapatista communities there, and Zapatista-inspired struggles around the world. In the studio tonight, we have Jessica and Tyler, and I'm Daniel. And thanks to Safi, who's on the controls, keeping us connected to the radio waves, which we otherwise wouldn't be. And we are going to be talking about some local and Mexican struggles.
And we're going to kick it off with a documentary that's coming to us from Chiapas. Recently, a international delegation arrived to Chiapas. They're there to register, recording, and reporting on some of the violence that's been going on there, and our past shows have been talking about that. So that act of solidarity is reminding us that learning, and what we mean by learning in this context is encountering and listening to each other. Learning is central to autonomy.
Our second part of the show is going to be a continuation of a documentary we broadcasted last month, kind of talking about that theme of learning. So the second part of the show, we'll be looking at a local California group, Acción Zapatista, and how to explore strategies of learning that confront capitalism and traditional sites of education.
All right. Well, we're going to go straight into, since we don't have very much time tonight, the audio that Alejandro, our special correspondent down in Mexico, sent us, and it has a couple different voices, including the voice of Subcomandante Marcos, talking about the challenges that Zapatista communities are facing right now.
Since the arrival of Felipe Calderón to the presidency of Mexico, the war against indigenous communities and resistance in Chiapas has increased significantly. A war that, with few notable exceptions, has received no mainstream media attention. It is a war with many fronts of attack, military, judicial, paramilitary, and economic, with the involvement of the federal and state governments, the army, the police, a number of paramilitary groups, and large enterprise. In this context, this past July 28, arrived in Chiapas a national and international caravan in solidarity with Zapatista communities, with the participation of hundreds of activists from Mexico, Argentina, Uruguay, Canada, the U.S., Spain, Basque Country, Italy, France, Greece, Belgium, Switzerland, and Denmark. The activists split up to visit several Zapatista communities in various regions to register not only the state of war, but also the resistance and the everyday construction of autonomy. This last Friday, at the Caracol of La Garrucha, Subcomandante Marcos and Teniente Coronel Moisés talked with the activists.
Queremos agradecerles que hayan venido hasta acá a conocer directamente lo que está sucediendo con el proceso zapatista.
I want to thank you for coming here to see firsthand what's happening with the Zapatista process. I want to tell you briefly the history of the EZLN and the Zapatista communities. How did everything start? 24 years ago, a small urban group arrived not in this part of the jungle, but somewhere much deeper into it, in what today is known as the Montes Azules Natural Reserve.
Y la concepción de ese pequeño grupo era la tradicional de los movimientos de liberación.
And the vision of this small group was the traditional vision of Latin American liberation movements. In other words, a small group of illuminated people who take up arms against the government, and that makes a lot of people follow them. They rise up, they knock down the government, and a socialist government is set up.
Las cosas hubieran quedado ahí. Pasó algo que nos salvó en esos primeros años.
Things would have remained that way. But something happened that saved us during those first years. And what happened is sitting here on my left. It's Teniente Coronel Moisés, Comandante Macho, Comandante Ismael, and many other compañeros who transformed the EZLN from an Orthodox army to an indigenous army. It's not just the fact that the EZLN is made up mostly of indigenous people, but that this army was defeated in its illuminated vision, whereby a group of men become the saviors of humanity.
Un hombre o un grupo de hombres se convierte en el salvador de la humanidad.
What happened is that the vision was defeated when we confronted the communities and we realized not only that they didn't understand us, but that their proposal was better.
Sino que su propuesta era mejor. Nos estábamos enfrentando a un movimiento de vida.
We were before a movement for life that had survived the attempts to conquer them by Spain, France, England, the United States, and all European powers, including Nazi Germany.
La Alemania nazi. No les estábamos enseñando a nadie a resistir.
We weren't teaching them to resist. We were becoming students of that school of resistance by those who had been doing it for 500 years.
Lo que pasa es que el EZLN se convierte en un ejército de indígena al servicio de los
indígenas. So the EZLN becomes an indigenous army at the service of indigenous people, and we grow from 6 people to over 6,000 combatants. So what brought about the uprising on January 1st, 1994? It was not an evaluation of the international situation. The Socialist Front had been defeated. The entire Latin American left was going through a period of withdrawal. Mexico's left was grieving the defeat after Salinas de Gortari not only won through electoral fraud, but bought off critical consciousness of a good part of the Mexican left. Nobody in their right mind would have thought that the conditions were right for going up in arms.
Mínimamente razonable nos hubiera dicho, no hay condiciones, no se alcen en armas. Pero hubo algo adentro que hizo.
But there was something internal that made us challenge those conditions. From 1990 to 1992, no children lived past the age of 5 in the Lacandon jungle. Before that age, they died of curable diseases.
Antes de los 5 años, morían de enfermedades curables. En el caso de un pueblo indígena,
in the case of indigenous people, the death of their children means the end of their culture. It was indigenous women who saw their children die who pushed the issue. Everywhere, the rebelliousness could be felt and the feeling that something had to be done.
A surgir esta inquietud, esta rebeldía, que había que hacer algo. La disyuntiva era muy sencilla. Si nos alzamos en armas, nos van a derrotar.
The choices were clear. We rose up in arms, they would defeat us. But people would notice and the conditions of indigenous people would improve. If we didn't, we'd survive. But we would die as indigenous people. Therefore, we did a consultation in 1992 where assemblies were organized in every community in order to decide. You all know what happened. I won't tell the story of January 1st, 1994. And a stage of resistance begins whereby we go from armed struggle to organizing peaceful civilian resistance. Something happened in all this process, a change in the EZLN's position regarding the issue of power. We have realized that solutions are built from below. The problem with the institutional left is perfectly clear in Spain with Rodríguez Zapatero and Felipe González. It is clear in the Basque Country, and it is clear in Italy.
Para el País Vasco, para la Italia rebelde tampoco debe ser una novedad.
But in Mexico, there are still those who believe it's possible for the left we have today to take power and govern and remain on the left.
Poder llegar a gobernar sin dejar de ser de izquierda. Prácticamente todos los países del mundo pueden dar cuenta.
Practically all countries in the world can testify to the contrary. Honest people on the left, who when they reach power, stop being so. Besides this position towards power, there is an essential characteristic of Zapatismo, the refusal to hegemonize and homogenize society. We don't desire Zapatista Mexico or Zapatista world. We want to be left alone in our place and for us to decide what it is that we want. And we think that it's only possible if other people like us desire and struggle for the same thing, and we establish a relationship of companionship. That's the idea behind the other campaign and the Sexta Internacional. Teniente Coronel Moisés described the meaning of Zapatista autonomy.
Les quiero pues explicar de cómo se está construyendo la autonomía, pues, para nosotros.
I want to explain how we're building autonomy. We indigenous peoples couldn't understand what the word autonomy meant. Little by little, we began to realize that autonomy was, in fact, what we were already doing. That we discuss things in assembly and we decide together.
En las asambleas y luego decidimos, pues, los pueblos en todas las áreas de lo que se está construyendo.
In every area, whether it be health, education, or collective work, things are discussed, analyzed in the communities, and then we decide what we need to do.
Y luego la decisión general de lo que se viene para construir lo que se necesita construir. Y una cosa tan importante es de que no pueden.
And something very important, that is that women cannot be left out. Of course, it has been very difficult, because we have a problem that comes from way back. In the times of the landlords, our grandmothers were mistreated and raped. So our grandfathers tried to protect grandmothers, so they were not seen by the bosses. And unfortunately, it remained that way, where only men meet and the women are left behind.
Que solamente los hombres se reúnen y se fue quedando a un lado las compañeras. Con esta construcción de la autonomía es como
with the construction of our autonomy, women now in the communities work with the men to solve the problems in the assemblies of the autonomous municipalities or of the good government councils.
Autónomos o en las asambleas generales que hace la Junta de Buen Gobierno. Compañeros, compañeras, van a ver cómo es de la forma de cómo se hace.
Compañeros, compañeras, let me tell you how we practice democracy. The highest authorities are the good government councils. They meet to discuss the work. Then they make their proposals to the authorities of the municipal councils.
Mares, o sea, de los municipios autónomos, y a las autoridades de los mares reúnen a las compañeras y compañeros.
The authorities of the municipal councils in turn meet with the authorities of the communities, and these authorities take their proposals to the communities themselves.
De la Junta de Buen Gobierno salen las decisiones.
There they come up with the decisions. Then they organize municipal assemblies. And then there is a general assembly of the good government council. Only then the will of the people is decided. And the other way around, the communities can propose tasks or laws that need to be implemented. The construction of autonomy differs in the various Zapatista regions, but keeping in line with our seven principles, that our governments must obey and the people command, that our autonomous governments must go down to the communities and not stay on top to command,
tienen que proponer al pueblo,
that they must propose to the people and not impose,
tienen que construir
lo that they must build and not destroy,
tienen que representar,
that they must represent, so that what they say is truly the words and the thoughts of the people.
Del pueblo, nuestras autoridades autónomas,
our autonomous authorities must serve the people and not serve themselves by being authorities.
Y por eso, compañeros, compañeras,
so, compañeros, compañeras, we hope that this sort of practice can be useful to others. Because when the people command, no one can destroy them.
Nadie lo puede destruir.
Caravan will travel through Zapatista communities until August 12. At that point, they will return to their states and countries to publicize what they've seen and heard. But they will also go back to unite struggles, multiply resistance, and continue building a different world. This is Radio Zapatista. Chiapas no se olvida.
Until the philosophy which owed one race superior and another inferior is finally.
Last month, we shared with you the story of a Zapatista comrade named Dr. Manolo Callahan. In May of 2008, Manolo was denied reappointment as an ethnic studies professor at Humboldt State University. Using interviews from various participants of a Zapatista-inspired community called Acción Zapatista de Humboldt, we shared an analysis of the tools employed by the neoliberal university to either silence or co-opt the intellectual contributions of people of color. We ended last month by posing the question, how do we come together as a community to create ways of learning that are based in dignity and allow space for a multiplicity of knowledges to be shared, acknowledged, and respected? This segment explores that question by looking at the tools utilized by Acción Zapatista to facilitate autonomous spaces of learning based on self-determination, dignity, and generosity. Professor Nadia Rosso explains that learning, as practiced by the Zapatistas, is not about sitting in a classroom and acquiring knowledge from a state-approved professional, but it is actually about disrupting the power relations that serve to objectify our experience as marginalized peoples.
We feel like it's important to take seriously questions regarding learning in the context of the university, and in order to do that, we need to consider the production of knowledge as it relates to power. Everything we do in the classroom, from the theories that we share, the discourses we use, the skill sets, all of these things operate within specific relationships of power. And the Zapatistas, you know, remind me of the centrality of the politics of knowledge production within that space. I think commonly, you know, they demonstrate that learning transcends beyond a particular way of thinking, to reveal that learning must really challenge the notion that what we're doing isn't just merely a process to arrive at an objectified meaning or an objectified understanding of something, but to expose learning is more so a mode of discussion. And that discussion allows us not only to recognize the forces around us, but to recognize how we're involved in this current historical moment.
The Zapatistas have politicized learning and made it central to their struggle for autonomy in Chiapas. Dr. Manuel Callahan discusses the ways that learning can become a powerful political force used to develop radical political agendas. He also speaks to the ways in which this process of learning is different from the methods used by the left to raise a predetermined consciousness and otherwise educate the masses.
Well, when we're really about learning and the organizing ourselves for social cooperation, right, as a fundamental human activity, then we're fully about thinking. Well, that's how you comport yourself when you learn. Right? I mean, humankind is its most dignified when it's learning, meaning when two or any number of people are communicating and sharing ideas and how to solve problems. That's cooperation. You're always cooperating to solve something. That's learning. That's dignity. And it's the essence of dignity. As political practice, as political objective, and as political strategy in terms of how do you analyze the situation so you see the dignity operating. We're not alone. The people are trying to break free and reclaim learning. Rather than organizing people, rather than conscientizing people, right, which is just another way of saying, well, I just need you to believe what I want you to believe so that you can get my team that's activist market share. A politics of conscientization already assumes a set vision, and we're arguing that we need to create a space where there's no set path imposed, but that we walk that path together so that we discover what we already know together, which is the situated knowledge. And we can do that only by walking together, shared emergent vision that comes out of the shared strong. And I think what the Zapatistas have done has given us an example, because we don't want to talk about a model, but we want to talk about like an example, a kind of embodied an approach that puts learning at the center of the political activity, the political work. And we've talked about this, where the encuentro becomes a strategy of, in its essence, a space of encounter to bring together people, because when people come together, there's that invention, right? There's political possibilities when people come together. But they also deliberately did that so that they could find out more about what was going on. And so it was fully and fundamentally an assessment tool, what was happening regionally, nationally, internationally.
Since the public uprising in 1994, the Zapatistas have challenged us to go beyond traditional solidarity activism by practicing Zapatismo within our specific localities. As stated throughout this discussion, learning is central to Zapatismo. The next two voices from Acción Zapatista explain various strategies used by the group to create spaces of encounter where learning takes place in a collective and horizontal manner. The first such example is the mitote, a practice with indigenous roots. The mitote is a gathering where individuals and community members come together to share their word, celebrate their struggles, examine the ways that those diverse struggles intersect, and devise ways in which they can support each other in the face of difference.
Mitotes have been organized around speakers coming to town or specific events that may be going on. And then there may or may not be focused activities. There may or may not be film screening. Various different tools that have been used to facilitate the conversation so that it's no longer just one person, but the conversation is being generated through the activities that the group as a whole is engaged in. So there's a sense of writing to something that's shared. When the conversation seems to have reached a point of departure, at that point we break up and there'll be a little bit of music playing. Eventually people will begin dancing and then it turns into more of a celebratory atmosphere. The mentality, the thinking behind mitotes is that in those moments there's a learning and a celebration of learning that validates situated knowledge. And by situated knowledge we mean the knowledge that we all bring to a table that can be included with academic knowledge, but that is also informed by our lived realities, by the way we know ourselves in the world, by the relationships we create, from the experiences we've had.
Other strategies of learning and resistance used by Acción Zapatista are coyuntural analysis and community research.
What I saw when I started working with that group was folks, community members, students, activists, they were coming together and taking up questions posed by the Zapatistas, like, how do we struggle where we are? How do we become a political force? And being that we're in a university, we started looking at how to read our experiences there politically and how to look at how our experiences held knowledge about, you know, race, gender, and class, and how that plays out in the classroom. And to interrogate that and was really an empowering experience for me. At the same time, it seemed to me that Acción Zapatista was making new spaces and pushing the limits of the classroom and reclaiming ethnic studies as a political project, that we're coming together in classes like Coyuntura to learn tools for collective analysis. And my experience of Coyuntura was like twofold. One would be like going with a group of people through facilitated activities to look at a specific situation and try and kind of suss out the relations of forces or the different kinds of power that was operating there, just to really understand it and to see, you know, where we could bust it down or, you know, what part was, like, affecting our projects in different ways. And the other part was to learn how to do that facilitation and, you know, what activities can kind of expose the way that power, like, manifests in learning or expose how a community might come together or coming together in community research to learn what it might look like to apply those tools, like what strategies would be for horizontal learning, which is something that's, like, not anywhere else in the university. It's like the university is trying to swallow the possibility of that. In community research, we're kind of looking at the ways that knowledge is collective, knowledge is political, and how, asking ourselves, like, how would we be intentional about that, in my opinion. And ultimately what I saw was, like, what the possibility of an emergent knowledge community is, and, like, how would we produce knowledge that would serve our communities. And I think that, like, the energy from that, like, bled the lines of the classroom, and it gave me energy, and it brought people together in spaces outside of the university, in people's houses and at parties, to study or have conversations. Also, like, to bring that knowledge back to our communities, back home and across borders and projects.
The mitote, coyuntural analysis, and community research are all tools of learning and knowledge production that are used by Acción Zapatista de Humboldt. These tools are used to articulate a political project that responds to the ongoing violence against people and ideas, and to create well-informed collective strategies for direct action. As Zapatistas, one of our challenges is to create insurgent learning communities where we work collectively to understand how power operates against us and produce an analysis that will help us come up with useful strategies for confronting capitalism, as well as creating our own ways of relating to each other as compañeros with dignity.
Until the philosophy which owed one race superior and another inferior is finally and permanently.
We're back from listening to the documentary about autonomous learning. It's interesting, you know, one of the things that I was thinking about when I was listening to that documentary is the way that alternative media, like what we do here at Radio Zapatista and, you know, KPFA in general and La Onda Bajita do, and the way that that kind of sort of alternative media production plays into the production of knowledge and also sort of contesting dominant narratives in sort of the mass media. And so I was thinking about the ways that this documentary that, you know, you guys have produced for this week and also sort of last month's show sort of plays into this collective production of knowledge. And so I was wondering if you guys could talk a little bit about how about that process and sort of the ways that worked out for you.
Yeah, I think just one thing I wanted to mention was the fact that the knowledge that was shared and the knowledge that Acción Zapatista tries to enact isn't something that is just, you know, the folks up there or us up there kind of came up with, but it also represents the sharing of knowledges between different groups that are inspired by Zapatismo. For example, talking about coyuntura or conjuncture, that information coming from, you know, from the folks in CIAPAC, which is a group down in Chiapas, and Gustavo Castro Soto, who put together some pop ed books. So just that the sharing of knowledge is happening all the time in these different Zapatista inspired groups.
Yeah, and something else that it was mentioned in the documentary, Dr. Callahan speaks of cooperation as a kind of an aspect of learning. And I think that we were practicing and finding new ways of learning just by making this, by staying in connection with folks in Humboldt, but also kind of generating and talking through how do we put together this documentary, what order, what analysis do we want to put out there. And I think we are kind of improvising in that way and learning from each other and the ideas that we brought to the table in the making of it.
You know, here at Radio Zapatista, another thing that we do is we try to sort of integrate the struggles that go on in Mexico and in Chiapas, like we were listening to tonight, with the struggles that are going on in, you know, here in the Bay Area. And so I think that this sort of very process of producing collective sort of knowledge and collective documentaries, I think, is another really important way that we can do that struggle.
Mm-hmm. And I would hope that it just doesn't stop here. And now, I mean, our intention with this documentary was to share the struggles that we have been going through and strategies to confront these struggles, specifically with creating learning and creating movement. And so please, whoever's listening to this, to our audience, respond to our email. It's radiozapatista@gmail.com. And if with any invitations, if you guys want more information on it, that's cool. We have resources to send to you. And
your strategies of learning and what different events or anything that sort of shows that you're trying to break down this hierarchy of, like, I know more than you, but people are coming together and being like, let's figure this out and let's figure out how to articulate what we're all trying to do and what's being done to us.
Right on. Well, this has been Radio Zapatista, Chiapas No Se Olvida. We'll be back next month, September the first Friday, on 94.1 at 9 p.m. And check us out on the web at radiozapatista.org. Thank you.
DJ Vadim, Deuce Eclipse in the house, y'all. What's up?
Cesar Cruz from the Independence Collective. This is not a test. Beaners, wetbacks, illegal aliens have taken over the airwaves. You have 3 days to evacuate your prejudice. Mayday, mayday is coming. International workers of the world are uniting. See, I've been your wetback and beaner, deportable, a scapegoat. But now I'm marching, with or without a green card. I've been your gardener, your cook, your nanny, and farm worker. But now, I'm a freedom fighter, and no jail cell can hold me. I am a thinker, complex, multilingual, splicing my tongue from Spanish, Nahuatl, English, Quechua, and languages unknown. I've been boxed into geography, color, identity. I am, though, boundless. You've called me Latino, Taino, Mestizo, Indígena, his or her panic. I call myself citizen, legal, free, intelligent, conscious, universal. I call myself human. And no, this is not a test. Gracias.